Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining me this week on Tia Time. We'll get to the show in just a moment. First, I wanted to say thank you to all of you who have posted a rating on Apple Podcast. Apple Podcast is an app that can be downloaded to your phone or computer. The algorithm it uses allows more artists and art enthusiasts like yourselves to hear about the show. So if you haven't posted a rating yet, do it now. Thank you. On with the show. Welcome to Tia Time with Artists, the weekly podcast where we discuss the methods, challenges, and real-life experiences of living our creative dreams. What kind of creative warrior are you? Musician, filmmaker, painter, choreographer, poet, sculptor, fashionista? Let's talk about it right now. I'm your host, Tia Imani Hanna. Welcome to Tia Time with Artists, and this week my guest is coming back to join us again from last year, Leslie DeShazer, violist, educator, dancer, entrepreneur. What else do you do?
Mom.
Welcome back to the show. So since we last time we spoke, you were talking about COVID, where you come out of lockdown, you've been out there doing stuff like crazy. Like I looked online yesterday and I was like, oh, you were playing last night at the Dirty Dog. I'm like, shoot, she didn't tell me that.
You blast things out on like social media and then you forget, oh yeah, I could actually invite actual people, call them and message. I did send out some messages, but I need an assistant. That's what I need.
Yes. I think we all need a work wife.
Exactly. Totally.
Yep. So it's good to see that you're out there, you know, playing again and you're working. You did some other big event recently too, out of town, didn't you?
Yeah, I did two things. So I did the Gateways Orchestra, which debuted at Carnegie Hall. Mm. That was super fun. We did two concerts, one in Eastman and then one at Carnegie. Then I came home for a literal like 16 hours, switched out my gear, switched out my clothes, took my kids to dinner. And then I went to do a tour that was about a month and a few days or so with this Swedish artist named Jens Lekman. And it was his music. It's always hard to classify music, but I think he probably fit in the singer-songwriter, indie pop, indie rock kind of genre. So yeah, we played a cross-country tour starting in LA and basically working our way up north and across the country. And we ended in DC with a bunch of cities in between. So that was cool. Very different experience for me. I played all violin on that and also did some show openings, which were really different. So this is something that you always do, is working solo. Okay. But I don't work solo that much. And all of the shows that I opened for, I soloed, worked solo. So I was looping. And then I was like, I guess I'll sing. Because Jens had asked me if I would sing for the tour. And it was originally like, can you sing some harmonies? I can definitely sing some harmonies. But then there was this one duet that featured the two of us. And I had to sing like a melody solo part. And I listened back to it and I was like, it's not bad, actually. Like the way I sound for the most part. So then I just decided to extend that into my opening acts and actually include singing in my performance, which I then also did at the Dirty Dog last night and the night before. So that was scary.
Yeah.
But I didn't destroy it. It was palatable, edible. What do you call it if it's music? I don't even know. You could stomach it.
Yeah, it was listenable. It was...
Yeah. Digestible.
Yeah, digestible. Yeah.
So different for me. Even what we wore on stage was like super different for me. I'm pretty like natural, but I like to get glammed up and dress up. So we wore these sort of like mechanic jumpsuits, like the mechanics wear over their clothes.
Right. Overall.
Yeah. And then Jens has this Swedish artist that he knows, and he put like some color patchwork on there. Okay. So it was like, oh, I'm going to wear those. But it was actually kind of fun. It was cool to not have to worry about what to wear every night at the show. I actually got mine tailored to make it a little bit different because that's just me. But so it was all like super different for me. But I think it was good for the most part.
Yeah. It sounds exciting. So how do you get these kind of gigs? Does somebody just know you and say, oh, call Leslie, or do you go to through an agent, or how do you do this?
For me, it was just like somebody new. So like the first thing, gateways, I've done gateways a few times. I was happy to get on this because a bunch of people want to be in the orchestra. They have to turn people away so much every year. So it's a privilege to be able to do it because there's lots of people who are also very good musicians who could do it. So that was just because they already know me. The tour with Jens, there's another violinist named Eddie Kwan who was supposed to do the tour. And Eddie, it was supposed to happen in 2020, the tour, but for obvious reasons, it didn't happen. Mm-hmm. And so Eddie ended up taking some other work. So when Jens rescheduled the tour, Eddie was no longer available. And so he gave my name to Jens, because there was actually an educational component to this tour as well. Half of the cities or so, like maybe six or seven of the cities, we worked with youth groups who played on stage with us. Jens's music has a lot of violin and string stuff. And so Eddie Kwan made arrangements of the music and the students got it ahead of time. And then they met with us like the day before. We were a little bit of tweaking things and they performed with us on stage. So I think I probably came to mind with Eddie because he knew what kind of performer I was, but also he knows what kind of educator I am. Okay. So I needed to have both to be able to successfully do this tour. So yeah. That's basically how that worked. The other stuff, I don't know. I think people get agents. I don't have an agent.
Because you do a lot of pit orchestras and stuff here in the area too. So like with musicals and things that come through.
I think that's mostly just people know my work from other things. And once you're like in these rotations, if you are consistent and prepared and professional, you usually get called again. But that's, I feel like that took years to build. Because when I was like in my 20s, I'm like, man, nobody's calling me. Mm-hmm. Can't get a gig. And I was really concerned. I remember when my son was younger. I don't know if I'll ever be able to get work as a musician. But it always ends up coming together. You just sort of have things pieced. But yeah, I worked with Paul Anichuk is the person who, he's different contractors. He contracts for the Fisher. The Fisher. Okay. And then you have different people. Johnny Trudell used to do for the Fox, or you got these various contractors. And so once you get to work with them, if they like your work, usually they call you back. So I've been fortunate to have people on my side who like what I do and call me back. You're always a freelance musician. Like that could change at any time. Someone younger, better comes along, makes a better impression. So that was part of the reason too why I really wanted to build my own thing, like by making an album, because during the pandemic we all knew, we always have had this thing in the back of our mind as freelancers, like anything can change at any moment. And then the pandemic happened and boom, and the floor just dropped from under all of us like all at once, and you're like, oh man, like I don't have any work all of a sudden. Like I remember my friend called me and was like, hey, have you been affected by the pandemic? This is like that weekend where everything got canceled, March, whatever, second weekend of March or something. And I was like, no, everything's cool. And literally when I got off the phone with her, I said, I hung up. This is 1990. I didn't actually hang the phone. You know what I mean?
I did. But
I got off of the phone with her. I was like, it was like 30 minutes or an hour or something. And I got my first cancellation. And it was just like, doom, doom.
Oh.
My whole life was canceled.
Oh, no.
And I was like, okay, now this is why I've always known in the back of my mind, I should at least have one or something that's my own. Right. So when stuff like this happens, which is not all the time, but if your opportunities start to dry up, you have something you've already been working on or putting in the work.
Yeah, it is tough. It's tough because when you are out there working a lot, then you don't have time to actually put that thing together. You don't have time to rehearse it. You don't have time to get your bands together and practice things. And you're just working on the stuff you're working on for the gig that you have right now. So how are you supposed to do all of this at the same time? Plus, you're being a mom and a wife. Yes. So it's okay. I got to sleep and eat sometime. So.
Yeah, that's exactly like the thing. Someone asked me last night at the Dirty Dog, because I mentioned to the audience that my project that I have is my first and only solo project. I say solo, but that's weird because it's not really solo. I've got a whole band playing. But it's my first debut artist.
Yeah, solo project as an solo artist. Yes, as a leader.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And he asked me, what's the story behind that? How come you haven't done it sooner? And I was like, because I didn't get around to it. But actually, it's bigger than that, because it's like, as you're working through, okay, what am I going to do that isn't already done or so out or so different that it's not marketable for certain markets. It's figuring out like how to make your voice work but still make money, because some people can still can do like authentically them, like way out, way whatever, and they have an audience. And some people go the complete commercial route, where it's, I'm giving people exactly what they want to hear. I'm not deviating. And then most of us fall somewhere in between. So the delay is also just like figuring out like what I want to put out there that's uniquely me, but also palatable to the average listener. And I say that loosely, average listener is very vague, but yeah, you're right. The pandemic gave me time. I was like at home, I've never had this much time. I guess I'll get in my garden, right? Walk, pray, meditate, breathe, look at squirrels and birds. Yeah. I do a lot of things I hadn't done for years.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
It is.
Just for the mental health aspect and for our own physical health as artists, and you just go, well, because the way the world is the way that it is, and because you're a string player. So you're a string player, if you're trying to go down the jazz route, because it's if you don't have your own group work, usually not doing jazz.
No.
You got to be doing the classical thing or something like it. Yeah. And that's a hard market too, because like you said, if you don't have the hookup and people don't know you for that, they're not going to call you for that.
Yeah.
So it's very hard to get
called as a front man, as a string player. There's only one guy who used to call me a lot here in Detroit named Wilbert Pegler. He's like a old school kind of, he reminds me of like those lounge pianists. So I used to work with him at the Detroit Athletic Club and at Bakers, and he played Bakers. And he hired me as a violist, which is even more unusual. Mm-hmm. Because most people don't even know what viola is,
right?
Let alone viola in a non-classical context. But he used to call me to play with him. And that was really cool. I love those gigs because I learned a lot of tunes that aren't even like traditional kind of songbook tunes. We did a lot of old show tunes and stuff like that.
Sure.
But he's the only person who ever called me like as a front man for his stuff. And then here and there, I'll get like some sideman stuff. But then I also work with Straight Ahead a lot now. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty cool. I really like playing in that band. I've been working with them over the years, but the last couple of years I've worked with them a lot more consistently. Mm-hmm. And then we have Music Noir. But like you said, like for the most part, you got to make your own, because most people aren't like, I need somebody to play all these Freddie Hubbard tunes. Let me call a violist.
Exactly. It's always going to be a horn player. There's this guy my uncle told me about. He was a jazz bagpipe player. Yeah. His name is Harley. The last name is Harley, I believe. I can't think of his name right now. He's famous. He's like super famous, but look up jazz bagpipe.
Jazz bagpipe. I got to put that in my
Yeah. I was like, that's the dude. I forget what his first name is, though. But I believe the last name is Harley, Harley. But because I've been doing my own thing now since 95 is when I first started improvising. And it's really not that long when you really think. I haven't been playing improvised stuff for very long at all.
Yeah.
But I knew even then, if I wanted to learn it and play it and actually get some experience on the stage, as a leader, you had to just be a leader. And learning to be a leader on the stage sucks, but you have to do it.
Yep. Yeah. And sometimes it works out to show up at jam sessions. But that's a whole job, because you got to come in with your own sound, your amp, got to plug in, you know, like,
and you have to let, and they have to let you, because I've been to many a jam session where they wouldn't even let me play.
Oh, you were in New York, though.
Yeah, and they wouldn't even let me play.
Yeah.
It's already 2:00 in the morning. I'm like, let me play.
You got a Bogart your way up there.
You know, it was like, come on.
I did that in Philly. On this tour, I was in Philly. I did that in Philly. They had this huge jam session at this place called some Backyard Bowl or something. Bowl Garden. Somebody from Philly's going to be like, what in the world? But I went, it's by the Fillmore. So I went to this place and they had a jam session and I was just standing back like, I want to play. And I asked one of the musicians, like, how do you get on stage? And he was like, maybe stand closer to the stage. So I walked up there and I was looking around. Finally, I just took my case and I got the guy's attention. I was like, I want to play. He was like, okay, I got you. But then a little time went by. And I was just like, he's not going to call me. So then he's like, okay, anybody who wants to play, come on up now. I was just like, I went up there. I literally got 45 seconds. to play.
Yep.
But I made those 45 seconds count.
That's just it. That's just it. I used to have, even in, I was here in Ann Arbor and wouldn't get on the stage. They wouldn't let me play.
Because yeah, you got to know somebody.
It was like open mic, come and play. I brought all my gear and they just looked at me like I was crazy. And then somebody walked in off the street. Oh, we know him. Okay, he's going to play the next 20 songs.
Yeah, really? Yeah. That's what happened. Some trumpet player. I got lucky a lot of times because I knew the rhythm section people, or being married to Dwight, people would respect me more. Mm-hmm. But they frequently just, violin.
Yeah.
So when I was in Philly and I set up, I got on that stage and I played that 45 seconds, I could see the reaction of the whole crowd. Wait, what? And then the guy who was hosting it was like, oh, I'm so sorry. I hope next time I can get you on here to play longer. I was like,
hey. Exactly.
Oh, wow. So, yeah.
Yep. But yeah, I had that for years. And so I stopped going because I had my 7 jobs. So I couldn't stay up all night and go to work the next day.
Yeah. Next time, Tia, we go together. They know me. They'll let you play. I've both gone my way on stage enough times now. They let me play.
Yeah. It's so funny, too, because I've gone to a couple things and I did have the respect and stuff. And then my gear didn't work. I'm like, no. My little amp didn't had batteries and everything, and it, for whatever reason, it didn't work. And I'm like, what is going on?
That happened to one of the violinists that when I was in Philly, she finally got into. She had an NS electric just like mine. I don't know what happened. She plugged in nothing. I was like,
man,
that feeling.
Yep,
been there before.
You can't win for losing sometimes, but. So anyway, horror stories that we've had, but at the same time, we've had lots of good experiences on the stage. Oh, yeah. And so this has all brought you around. Like at some point you were dancing a lot too, right?
I danced a lot until I had kids. I had my son. I remember one of my friends was horrified watching me on stage dancing pregnant. My son was 7 months pregnant. I think I did a somersault or something.
Oh, no.
She was like, you need to sit down. But yeah, I danced with him through my pregnancy, after my pregnancy. By that point, I was pretty much just taking classes after him. I wasn't really performing anymore. I took classes. I used to take classes with Madame Gaboldo over at Little Rock Baptist Church, I think it was. But she does this Dunham technique, which is a really beautiful form of modern dance.
Catherine Dunham technique.
Yes, exactly. So I would do Dunham with her. But before that, I was doing a lot of West African and Congolese dance. So the Dunham was a perfect sort of marriage because you get that African-centered rhythm, but you also get the technique of the more Euro-centered, modern, put them together. So I would do that in some Horton technique classes. And I did take dance classes even when I had my daughter, but the performance part of it just stopped. And I think what replaced it for me now is my jump roping, because that's my jumping rope. That's kind of what I like to do. It feels like dancing a little bit, but it's not dancing, obviously, but it's similar. Mm-hmm. But I did that. And it's really funny because this past weekend was Movement Festival here in Detroit. And for the people who are dancers. So I actually got out to a couple of events. And what is so hilarious is that I used to go to this place called St. Andrews, and they used to have this. They have, I think it's called The Shelter. They have 3 floors. And we'd always go to the hip hop floor, me and my friend. We'd go religiously every Friday. We were there. Saturday, we were doing Latin dance, salsa club. So there's this guy who used to be there who I used to love dancing. It was just the right kind of energy. And you just dancing till you're sweating. You don't care how ugly you look, that kind of thing. So I got out to the Movement Festival this year and I went to an event, and who do I see? I see him. And I'm like, oh my gosh, hey. And we start dancing. And the next thing I know, I'm sweating. Hair's all over my head. My dress is soaked. I had on this cute little dress that was way too short. I shouldn't even worn it. I don't even know if I was dancing like a lady when it was all said and done. But by the time I got home, I felt so good. And I saw him again. And I was like, man, I missed that. Just that free energy to just dance. Sure. It's been so long since I did that. But it was just funny to see us both literally 20 years later, we're 50 and I'm 44 and we're over here still dancing. You can't do all the stuff we used to do, jumping in the splits and, but still feeling good and still in pretty good shape. And I just remember being younger, seeing older dancers and just thinking they age so well. Mm-hmm. And I think it's because dance is something that, even though people are frequently shy to do it in public, it's something that we connect with so well, because as humans, movement is supernatural for us, and rhythm is like what we're born with. Our heartbeat is, it's rhythmic. It has to be rhythmic for us to live. Most people don't let go and just like really dance because they're too self-conscious. But when you do, it's like spiritually so elevating. And I haven't done it in so long, like in public with someone. I forgot how good that felt. It's like, man, I gotta do that more. I used to be a dancing maniac.
Sure.
Yeah.
But you've got to counterbalance the uptightness of being a classical violin and viola player, because we're the stuffiest, stuck up kind of, because you have to be so fastidious about what you're playing.
Yes.
And be so exact that you have to be perfect all the time. Yeah. So you get that stuck feeling. So I can totally understand the dancing.
Yeah. But it's also cultural. Like we feed into that culture and we keep it going, because it doesn't have to be like that. Because like when I do Gateways, for example, Gateways is an all Black orchestra. We have a different experience culturally. So we bring that to the music too. It's a whole different vibe than when I play as a sub in like the opera orchestra or some of the other like symphonies here in the city. Those are still fun, but the cultural background, I don't have that same relation to the people around me. And so it's not as like earthy and good feeling. But I think classical musicians, we've completely shot ourselves in the foot. We've created this sort of lifestyle and this sort of pressurized situation where we can never relax. And it doesn't have to be like that. I thought about this a lot, because when I was in the last tour, I felt like I was under so much pressure, like opening the shows. And then the first song that the artist always did, it was the hardest song to play for me. And I was like, ooh, this pressure is too much. And after I got through it, and then I did the Dirty Dog lesson the night before, and I realized I tend to get pretty nervous. I can have pretty high levels of anxiety when I feel like I'm under pressure. And yesterday and the day before, I wasn't feeling it as much. And I was thinking it's probably because I just got done doing a tour. I was feeling pressured like every single day. And nobody was pressuring me. So I started asking myself, is it real?
Okay.
Is this real?
Okay.
You know what I mean? Because if you mess up, you might not get called again.
Right.
But you've also messed up and you got called again.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
you know what I mean? It's like,
yeah.
How real is this pressure?
Mm-hmm.
I still haven't figured it out. I'll let you know on the part three.
Unfortunately, the time when it's real is when you don't get called back because of something you did on that tour. Yeah. But that's when you know. Otherwise, you don't know.
But then there's other opportunities. That's what we don't look at. There's a lot of things I probably haven't gotten called back for, but I was on to the next thing and I didn't even think about it.
And sometimes it has nothing to do with you at all.
Yeah. And sometimes you don't want to be there, because I didn't have a situation where I did, you know, get asked not to come back to something. But actually, it was so stressful. Mm-hmm. I was actually relieved.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have never experienced that kind of anxiety and nervousness on stage at this point in life. I can feel how it's affecting my body. You multiply that times weeks and days and months. That's how people die early.
Yeah.
So
it is.
That person probably did me a favor, even though in the moment it felt crappy to be asked not to come back. In hindsight, I'm like, thank you. Because you were hard to work with. And I was feeling like, it's like you're dreading so much to be there, mm-hmm. that you would rather like be able to call in sick. You'd rather be having the flu than to be there.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
It's a problem. It's a problem. Yep. Yeah. Getting to the point where you realize that. So that's great. So you're able to verbalize it and like, okay, wait. I don't have to do that. There's always something else. And the something else is this new CD, right? This new album that you just did has been released. And is it a label, or is it called Journey With Me?
Yes, not on a label. I have no distribution, no deal.
Okay.
Just live on my own.
Tell us a little bit about it. Let's go track by track. We're going to do a listening party now. So Journey With Me, what is that song? What's the journey you went?
Honestly, that song, I called the Journey With Me after I finished it.
Okay.
Because that's what it felt like to me. Because one day I sat down and I just started writing. I had this idea of a bass line. And I put the bass line into Logic. And I'm like, okay, put that in. Loop that a little bit. And then I started singing ideas over it. And I started hearing some melody. And then I put the intro with the tremolo. I heard that tremolo with that bass line. And then just the parts of it just started to come together. I wrote that song in 3 hours.
Okay.
which is like record time for me, because usually I'll write a song and I'll go away from it and I'll come back. And like, but it was like that day, it was like all the ideas were just coming. And then I sat back and I listened to it and I was like, this feels like a journey. Like it's a little like mysterious and maybe feeling a little like angsty in the beginning. And then when the groove kicks in, it's like, okay, we're going.
Feeling.
I put it as a title track because the rest of the songs have more personal meaning.
Okay. Who's
on that track, good question. We have Brandon Rose on bass, Brendan Davis on keys. Mm-hmm. Who else? Sasha Kashpirko is on guitar, and Nate Wynn on drums.
Okay. The next track is Simply Complicated, which is a hilarious title. I love it.
Yes. Okay, so that song originally had a different title. That song actually had the title, It's Simple. And what I was thinking about is, like, a lot of things in life are, like, really just simple. You offend people with your mouth, be quiet. Or you have struggle with alcohol, stop drinking. You're bad with money, stop spending, right? Like, these solutions are super simple, but to get to them isn't, right? So I wrote the song, It's Simple. But then when we were in the studio playing it, the guitarist was like, the song is not simple. But the song sounds simple. To me, it sounds simple. It's just like a real, it's just like a vibe. But what's happening underneath it harmonically isn't necessarily simple. And in the form, there's some kind of like funky form things. Mm-hmm. So that's why I renamed it Simply Complicated, because a lot of things in life that feel simple are actually very complicated, like getting along with people, like when you're married or you have a partner, that person can make you mad about the same thing for 10 years. And then from the outside, you're like, oh, they're going to do that. Why are you still mad about it? The one on the outside, they've always been doing that. Why are you still getting mad? In your mind, I still shouldn't be getting mad. But for some reason, 10 years later, this is still making me mad. That's basically how what I had in mind with that one. Just like, life feels complicated, but a lot of things are really just simple.
Are the same artists on that track?
Except Sasha. There's no guitar on that one.
Compartments?
Compartments. That one I wrote shortly after a huge loss. And I was sitting at the hospital on the main floor after having to take my loved one off of life support. And I remember really well sitting in the hospital. It's a feeling I had years and years ago at the airport, but I wasn't going through something hard. But I had that connection of like, life can be, people are just going back and forth. You're sitting down there in that hospital and you literally just watch a person super close to you take their last breath. And you're sitting there and people are just walking back and forth. They have no idea. Mm-hmm. Life can't stop. You wish you could just like hit a giant pause button, but you can't. So what you do is you are like, you grieve, you do your tears. But if you ever experienced loss, now it's on to planning the funeral. Mm-hmm. So I was just amazed at how after I sat in that hospital lobby for so long, I got up, got in my car, went home, sat on the couch, started making plans. And it's that idea of you can have hard life things going on and you can just get up and do what you have to do. It amazes me. I see people, not just myself, who do it, who are suffering major losses while also going through cancer or any number of things. And we have this like, this such a hardwired fight or flight kind of mentality. We take that stuff and we stick it in a compartment in our mind and we keep going. So the first part of it is like, the melody is very repetitive. I even actually tried changing the melody so that it would be different because it feels like it, to me, it felt like it repeated too many times that everyone I asked, no, it's good. But the way the harmony moves underneath it is very unconventional. Mm-hmm. So like when everyone plays that tune and they have to solo on it, they're like, oh my God, it sounds easy because the melody is really simple, but the harmony is moving a little like giant steps in a way, like those minor thirds kind of thing. So that's like the undercurrent, like all the stuff happening in your life under there. But then the melody is repetitious, sort of like more flatline thing, which kind of represents how we go through our day, doing things we need to do, get the kids here, take care of mom, take this call, blah, blah, blah. But underneath, there's just so much that you're dealing with. And then in the middle section, the harmony is much less dense. It's much more open feeling. And the melody gets more like smooth and just like simple. And that's like your breathing space. Those sort of decompressing moments. That was a lengthy explanation, but that's what that's.
It's deep. Thank you.
Acceptance. So that one came from me thinking a lot about my inability to accept myself and then life circumstances. So you don't really have a choice, but we behave like we do. So I'll give a really simple example. Like, I've always been super bottom heavy. And so I work out and trying to be slimmer, slimmer, slimmer. But the bottom line is, when I'm slimmest, slimmest, my legs and my bottom are still going to be bigger than my upper body. So it's like, at one point I was like, just work with what you have. Stop trying so hard to fit into something you absolutely cannot fit into. It's like my hair, so many things about me, we've worked so hard to try and not be it. And now with my kids and my students, I'm just like, don't waste your energy. Like, it's such a waste of energy. Like, we spend so much time trying to be something that we're not. Mm-hmm. And it's just like the energy that we put into trying to change ourselves, if we put that same energy into loving and liking ourselves for exactly what we are in that moment, how different would life be for us? And that's what it was. And it's not just about the superficial. I give the body examples because ultimately that starts in a mental space that is void and dark, right? Like, you're constantly working really hard to change you, but what if you die tomorrow or the next moment? You're putting energy into something that doesn't matter right now. Like, right now, okay, so you're like 12 pounds heavier than you want to be. But what does it change about the right now? You can't lose 12 pounds right now. So just put on whatever you want to wear that day. Walk with your head up and do what you got to do. Be cool with it, because nobody's really worrying about you like that. They're too busy worrying about themselves. But more importantly, it's like, you are uniquely you. And it makes me think about this interview I heard B.B. King do. And I always quote this because I loved it. He basically was like, people used to tell me I'm the best. I'm the best blues guitarist out there. And he's like, do you think I think that? No, I do not. But nobody else is B.B. King. Mm-hmm. Period. So it's like this sort of epiphany of, you look at the world, we got billions of people. How amazing is it that there is no replication of any single person in this entire world? Mm-hmm. That's mind blowing.
It is.
And when you think like that, it's like, uniquely you, like out of billions of people, like nobody is identical to you, not a single person in the entire world. Mm-hmm. But yet we're working really hard to be like everybody else. So that's where that song came from. And actually when I was on the road, I wrote lyrics to it. And that's what I performed last night. And when I opened in the other shows while I was on the road, I actually sang lyrics.
That one has lyrics.
So the lyrics are, I won't sing them. Okay. I'm not warmed up. But it's, I wish that I could turn back time and learn how to accept me. The years I've lost, the things it costs, trying hard not to be me. Oh, I tried and tried just to realize that in this whole wide world, I'm the only girl like me. The same is true for you and you. Find your place of acceptance. Just as you are, you've come this far. Be kind to you.
Yeah.
That's it.
So, all right.
Yeah. And that personnel is, the bass player actually is Marion Hayden, because I want an upright bass on that one. So it's Marion, Brendan again, and Nate is on drums. And Sasha Kashbirko, he plays a nice introduction with me out front on that one, too. Okay. So, yeah.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Cruisin' is actually co-written. My friend, Leah. Yeah, her husband,
John Chalebi,
is a prolific writer. It's really crazy. Like, he doesn't work full-time as a musician, but he writes. He does his job. He works with kids. He's like a school teacher. And he comes home every day and sits at his computer and writes music. He's got so much music that he has not shared with the world. But I asked him to write something for the record. And we sat down one day and we went through, we tried to write something together. And that, it can't, we had some results, but you're them. The idea that is totally different. So he just sent me this chord progression that he found that he had. And it was called Cruisin' in D major because it's like in D. And so he was like, you can have this, whatever. So I just played it over and over again, and I kept singing ideas to it until I came up with What You Hear. And that one, I just call it a cruising because it feels like cruising to me. It feels like a nice drive on a nice day.
On Avenue.
Exactly. And that one was fun because I actually did not rehearse that one with the band. I waited, and we did it in the studio. I basically gave it to them in the studio. And I think we played it down once. Mm-hmm. And you know, sometimes things just work out like that. I like a lot because it feels nice. I like the bass solo that Brandon Rose did in there. And then also I did a pizzicato solo in that one, which I think is unique because usually we do pizzicato, but generally not so much as a whole solo. So that just gives a little bit more range to the instrument people can hear. And we can do something more than arco and tremolo because people love tremolo. If you want to get people to get up and, if you want to just tremolo, and you go all the way and follow me down.
It's that bag of tricks thing. I don't know. It's
that like, is my trick. Tremolo. Like, for the trill. Like people love that trick. Like, you get down, girl. So the pizzicato part is unique on that one.
All right. Thank you.
In the morning. Oh, that one. That one was the one that, like, I changed it so many times. I changed it so many times that when we went to the studio, I was like, now which version is this? So the beginning of it is that intro. So the story behind that one is, this is a terrible thing about me, but it's true. I wake up in the morning thinking about all the things that I need to work on. So you go to bed that night and you're like, why did I drink that much? I'm never going to drink again. Or like, why didn't I say what I was thinking that day? Or, oh, I haven't put enough money away for my kids. I haven't gotten the college funds together. Oh, shoot. Like, I'm usually, like, the things I didn't get done wake me up out of my sleep, or the things I need to do wake me up out of my sleep. I start the day in this headspace of, oh, my God. So are so many things I need to improve. Not accepting. I just did what I did. Whatever. The beginning of it is this kind of slow introduction, but it's really, like, tense. To me, it is, harmonically. I actually think in, like, some parts of it feels a little bit like Wayne Shorter's Infinite Eyes. A little bit, but it's like this like tense kind of introduction, and then you get the drum, and then you just go into a groove, because that's me getting up and just doing what I gotta do, stop sitting in bed agonizing, get up. So that one, I changed it lots of times, like that the guitar that you hear and the sort of the chorus part, there was actually like a whole guitar line that happened before that. I took it out and I told Sasha it had nothing to do with you. I just couldn't be convinced that that was supposed to be there, but that's the one that like I considered not putting it on the record because I couldn't really connect with it as much, but I still like it. I like the intro. And then the strings on that one, that's all me.
Okay.
So I put down the cello, viola, violin parts. I think I might have put 3 viola parts on that one. And then this one's slightly different personnel. Rick Rowe is playing piano on it. Mm-hmm. And Bob Hurst is playing bass.
Oh, nice.
I know. I got lucky with both of those.
Yeah, wow.
I can't believe that Bob actually got up and came to the studio with me. I couldn't pay him what he would actually make in real life. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. That's who that is. Yeah.
That's nice. I love this title, Kunta's Revenge.
Bob, I was like, hey, you have any music you want? Because like I had a couple other tunes that I considered recording, but they didn't feel like they fit. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I reached out to Bob and I was like, you got any music you want recorded? Because he writes all the time. He's got lots of recordings. And I like his stuff. It's like African-centered, a lot of his music.
Yeah, he's got really, some beautiful stuff.
Yes. And the times, like he's got insane sense of time. That tune is in 6/8. Mm-hmm. But if you listen to it like, it's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. But then it goes to that part. The meter does not change there. It's still in 6/8.
Wow.
It feels like something totally different. And I didn't count. Because I was like, if I count, I'm going to get confused.
Right.
I was watching Bob. I watch when he changes. Okay, there it is. And then Nate Wynn, he's really genius. Just like, he's a great drummer already, but then helping the musicians like to feel where to go in, where to come out. Like he's really good at setting things up. Galen's also super good at that, like setting things up and okay, that's enough. The drummers, they're watching from a whole different vantage point. They can see when you're about to put your bow on the string. Nope, that's not it. Like that. Put it over here. So Nate, like he set that up really nicely. Having him play it made it a lot easier to like to jump in there. But that's a really fun tune. And I'm really honored that Bob was nice enough to let me use it and didn't even wink an eye at like what he could have asked me for to do it. Yep. That's why it's so different. Kunta's Revenge. That's why it's like out of all the tracks, like it's like the most different in terms of titles because it's not my tune.
That's all right. You worked it. You made it yours.
Yeah. It's a cool tune. I like it a lot. It's very groovy.
Thank you. Yeah. That's fantastic. So where did you cut the tracks? What studio did you go to?
There was two studios that I worked with. So all the recording happened at Tempermill. The Tempermill? Ferndale. That's where all the recording happened. But all the mixing and mastering happened at Studio 54 with Steve Capp, who is amazing. I'm so glad that... So Brandon Williams introduced me to Steve Capp. Also, Dimitri's neighbors helped me a lot out in the studio in Tempermill. I want to make sure that I acknowledge people who helped me a lot because they didn't ask me for anything, which I'm super grateful for. But Steve Capp used to be at Studio A. Studio A was a great studio. But then he moved away to, I think, Iowa or something. Okay. And now he works at a Studio 54 and he's great at mixing and mastering. Mm-hmm. So that's where we did that portion of things.
I'm so excited about this CD and I'm glad you're out there playing again. And my goal at some point, I have to start practicing again because I've been way out of practice since I've been stuck in the closet over here, you know, and at home during COVID and everywhere else.
Yeah.
And start woodshedding big time.
Yeah.
But I want to do a CD of Detroit violinist duets.
That'd be fun.
Yeah. So, and string player duets. I think that would be really fabulous. But
there's a decent amount of options in Detroit, too. Because there's
there are.
Me, Evan Garr, Michelle, you could even get maybe Regina to come do something with you.
Well, that's a hope. You know,
Lynn Laster. A lot of violinists have come out of Detroit, not playing classical music primarily.
Exactly. And not even just string players. So, Marion, some other folks. I'll see what we can find. Yeah, but you know, we'll see. We'll see what happens. Yeah. But anyway, so I'm looking forward to seeing you live when I can. I know you're always you're gigging on weeknights. I work at night, but I'm looking forward to seeing you live at some point.
I will be doing Ann Arbor Summer Festival.
Okay.
In my group on July 2nd. That's a Saturday.
Okay.
Top of the Park.
Okay. Fantastic.
I'm doing a bunch of stuff with Straight Ahead this summer. I got a lot of things going on this summer, but solo stuff is just so far that. And then I'm doing Kimmy Horn's Festival, and I'm hoping to get on the Detroit Jazz Festival.
Okay.
So I really hope that I get a spot on that. That will be really helpful for me to get a bigger audience.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be cool. Thank you.
But thank you for being on the show.
Thank you. Of course.
Thank you for joining us this week on Tia Time with Artists. Make sure to visit our website at tiaviolin.com where you can subscribe to the show and never miss an episode. Please leave us a rating at Apple Podcasts to expand the reach of the show. We really appreciate that help. And we'd also like to say thank you so very much to our sponsors, Michigan ArtShare, a program of Michigan State University Extension, and Cold Plunge Records. And also all of our Patreon supporters. We couldn't do it without you. Thank you. We'll see you next week at Tia Time.